We're joined now by Bruce Y. Lee. He is a senior contributor and writer for Forbes. And in addition to being a writer, he's a journalist, professor, systems modeler, computational and digital health expert, avocado eater, and entrepreneur. Not always in that order, he says, though, as he joins us now on the program. I love that bio, Bruce, and appreciate you joining me on the show today.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to be talking about some conspiracy theories that have to do with COVID-19. You recently wrote about this in Forbes. And first up, can you describe some of these dueling conspiracy theories we've seen out of both China and the U.S. from some of the fringe politicians? Because as you write about, they're largely the same conspiracy theory, but the only difference is who the culprits are. Can you describe what these theories are?
Exactly. So we're seeing these theories are coming out that suggesting that the new coronavirus, the one that causes COVID-19, was somehow manufactured or bioengineered within a lab and then released. Some are suggesting that it was released accidentally, and some people are suggesting that it was released purposely. And there's been accusations from people like politicians in the United States suggesting that China did it, and there's been people in China, including politicians, have suggested that the U.S. military has done it. So these conspiracy theories have been floating around, and in some cases, people can be quite aggressive about them.
And really, it looks like the only evidence they have is the fact that there is a biosafety level 4 lab located in Wuhan, China, which is where the coronavirus outbreak originated. And how are they using this to springboard their conspiracy theories? Because this is pretty much the only thing they have to go on, correct?
Yeah, I haven't seen any other evidence to suggest that supports their claims. You know, if you talk about a biosafety lab level 4, there are those types of labs in the United States as well. So different cities in the United States, including Atlanta, Georgia, Galveston, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, have those types of labs as well. So proximity of a lab doesn't support anything.
Yeah, exactly. And you go through some funny analogies talking about, how proximity doesn't mean it's the cause of what happened. But more specifically, mm-hmm. Can you talk about why it's unlikely that something would have been leaked from one of these types of facilities?
So scientists have been looking at the source and the origin of this new coronavirus, because, of course, that's of strong interest. Where did this actually come from? So they've essentially been doing genetic analysis. So if you look at a virus has a protein envelope and has those things within the envelope, but it also has genetic material inside the envelope. And it's just like doing genetic testing. So if you want to find out where someone's from or where someone's, who's someone's parents, you can do genetic tests. So these are a little more complex, but they've looked through the genetic material of this virus, and they found very close matches with viruses that are circulating among bats. And the same thing happened with the SARS outbreak back in 2002, 2003. So the belief was that the SARS virus back then came when somehow the virus got transmitted from a bat ultimately to a human. There might have been an intermediate host, like another animal, but eventually passed that direction. And so the genetic studies suggest the same. They also found that just the way the virus is put together and the way the genetic material is put together is not how you would put together a virus if you put together in the lab. So if you wanted to manufacture a deadly virus, you would pick a virus that's already, or a backbone of a virus that's already deadly or can already cause problems. And the coronavirus really doesn't fit that bill. And we've seen that the coronavirus is, not really behaving as an effective, quote unquote, effective bioweapon would. It does kill people, but not in a very concerted, directed manner. There's all kinds of different outcomes from it. So it just does not match the playbook that one would expect when it comes to a bioweapon.
I mean, just kind of playing the role of mad scientist here in some sort of mm-hmm. bizarro world. How would you even make a biological weapon that would be more effective than what the coronavirus even is right now?
Well, there's many other viruses that are much more deadly. So mm-hmm. Ebola virus, the Marburg virus. There's unfortunately a number of different types of pathogens. Anthrax is another example, smallpox. So our history is full of pathogens that are more deadly, pathogens that can kill quickly, more quickly, and more effectively, and also pathogens that you can control and release. So, you know, when people talk about anthrax, the concern is you can actually contain the anthrax and then release it in a situation, or, you know, smallpox is a similar situation where you can contain it and then release it, and it can spread fairly rapidly. So there are other types of viruses, other types of pathogens that are more effective. So why would you choose a coronavirus?
And then you alluded to this as well in your piece in Forbes. Again, we're speaking with Bruce Y. Lee. He is a senior contributor and writes about healthcare issues in Forbes, that we wouldn't even necessarily have the technology to even engineer something like COVID-19. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect?
Yeah, so if you look at the way, so there was a study which looked at how the protein spikes have been developed. So it's fairly elegant in the way that these protein spikes. So if you look at the virus, it looks like one of those morning stars or one of those spiky massage balls that you might have seen. So it's round and has all these spikes that are coming out of them. And what happens is the virus attaches to something called an ACE receptor on a human cell. So a human cell has a bunch of, especially in the respiratory tract, will have a bunch of these ACE receptors, and the spike attaches to it, and it eventually uses one of the enzymes within that's manufactured by the human cell to then break apart the spike, and then the spike then helps the virus enter into the cell. Now, that would be tough to design in a lab, because, you know, as humans or scientists can do certain things within a lab, but to be able to develop that type of mechanism would be tough. So the belief based on one of these studies is that this looks like something that was evolved by nature, because in the end, nature can be a lot more effective in developing these quote-unquote new technologies. You know, we may be good at developing, as humans, developing apps for ride-sharing or, you know, to take selfies of each other and things like that. Yeah. But this is very complex. So it's not believed that we have the technology to do that.
Yeah, and just talking about that part with how this could evolve, because as you said, it came from bats, but this is something that probably has evolved for years and years and years. And yeah, it would be very tough to engineer in a lab since we don't really have the technology. And as you said, we have other examples of how viruses have kind of evolved over the years to be, well, unfortunately, very effective at latching on to humans and other animals and species, correct?
Exactly. And we have to keep in mind that we don't know when that jump actually occurred. The other possibility is that this virus has been around for a while and infecting humans, but really not causing any troubles. And so what can happen is that maybe it did originate in bats and then infected humans, but didn't really cause much trouble. And then you had some mutations, and then it started causing more trouble. We only know a certain percentage of the viruses that exist in nature, and there are many viruses where it's not really clear what they actually do. So, you know, our scientific knowledge has grown quite significantly over the past several decades, but there's still a lot of things that we don't know. We don't know the different types of microbes that live in our environment and when they might change from friendly microbes or sort of neutral microbes to more dangerous ones. So these things are complex. So to come up with conspiracy theories without really having any clear scientific evidence and just floating them around, you know, that in itself can be quite dangerous.
Final question for you here, Bruce, and this might not necessarily be your specialty, but why do you think people end up latching on to these types of conspiracy theories in the first place?
Well, there's several reasons. So one is people want a simple explanation for everything. So they may not know the complexity of things. So it's a lot easier to say, okay, this is a problem, they did it, you know, looking for someone to blame. So that seems simpler, and you know, there's not an interest in looking deeper into the complexities of the science. Second of all, yeah, when you have an emergency, there's different ways you can go. So one is say, okay, let's try to solve this problem together. Let's figure out what's going on, and we're all in it together. Or you can try to blame someone. You can point fingers and say, oh, you know, it's their fault. they're doing it, et cetera. And there might be political reasons to do that. There might be political reasons to say, okay, this we didn't expect it, and it's because they released it, and there's no way we could have prepared for it. And that, frankly, is wrong because, epidemic preparedness, pandemic preparedness is something that the infectious disease community, the infectious disease modeling community, the emergency preparedness community have been pushing for years. Two years ago, or three years ago, in 2017, I wrote a piece for Forbes about how Bill Gates was warning that there's going to be a pandemic. It's not if, it's when. There's going to be another pandemic, and there's going to be far deadlier ones that come in the future until we actually do something about it, until we actually are more prepared. And the trouble is we're not prepared. We don't have all the strategies in place. As we've seen over the past 2 or 3 months, a lot of the preparedness went out the window. Like, there's no clear strategies on how to deal with these things. So that can be another factor in spreading the conspiracy theories.
Unfortunately, Bruce, we are up against the clock, but really appreciate your time today. We've been speaking with Bruce Y. Lee. He is a contributor for Forbes, also a professor of health policy and management at City University in New York. Bruce, hope you're staying safe out there, and really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for having me.